You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today I have Deirdre McGlashan on the line, and she's CMO over at BrandGuard. Deirdre, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Adam. I'm so excited to be here.
All right, so a big topic. Anybody that's been watching this show for a while or that's not under a rock, AI. We're talking about it all the time. It's on everybody's mind. If you're a business owner, an entrepreneur, hey, even if you're just a content creator and want to create content. So today's topic is a big deal, the role of AI and automation in digital marketing. And we'll be getting into BrandGuard and also what they're doing around this topic. So all that and more. But just to get us kicked off, we'll start this episode the way that we start them all with what we like to call our Mission Matters Minute. So Deirdre, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Deirdre, what mission matters to you?
That's a great question, Adam. Well, I was lucky enough to start my career in the early days of the commercial internet. So when I think about what my career mission has been, I think that it's consistently been to help marketers use and leverage technology and innovation to help tell their brand stories and to reach their consumers. Through these new amazing digital channels, we were able to tell smaller stories that sometimes became bigger stories, more diverse stories, more personal stories, because there are just so many more channels to tell them in, and not just the traditional, like very large produced television commercials, for example. And then I met BrandGuard, and I think that our missions aligned, which is why I was so excited to join them, because the BrandGuard mission is to enable the use of AI for marketers.
It's great, and thank you for sharing that. And I do want to kind of circle back and stay in those early days for a little bit longer. So you said that you mentioned that you started in the early days of digital marketing, like from there to having these conversations about AI. Like what's that like? Like, what from your vantage point? Like, it's a whole different world.
It is. It's funny. It is a whole different world, but in a way, it kind of feels like it's the same thing over and over again, because AI is just a new technology. Do you know what I mean? When the commercial internet came and brands could offer interactivity and people could interact with the things that the brands were giving them, like a website, like a landing page. Like for Nike, one of the things at the agency I worked for, we built the front end for Nike ID. So enabling people to customize shoes. That was so revolutionary. And then the next phase happened, you know, ubiquitous internet. That was back in the days of dial-up. Then we had ubiquitous internet.
We got to talk about dial-up for a second. Whenever this comes up with the show, I got to pause. So just for the younger crowd, explain what dial-up was. I had it, by the way.
So back in the old days, we actually accessed the internet through telephone lines. Mm-hmm. And so if you wanted to get on the computer, you had to make sure nobody else was on your home line. And then you had to activate your modem, and it made these horrible screeches, which was machine language telling on the other side that it was trying to connect, and you got to connect at some horrendously slow speeds, like 28.8.
So you couldn't just pull out your phone and like click on the Wi-Fi? It didn't work like that? No.
But yes, when broadband Wi-Fi, when that came, that was a whole new revolution, and being able to deal with, you know, streaming video, for example. So that brought a whole new evolution of things. And then social was probably the next one. And we had to go through the same thing. What does it mean to have these social networks to have people interact directly with brands, talk to them on things like Twitter? Then data-fed, programmatic, and now AI, it feels like it's, in a way, kind of the same conversation every time, because it's really understanding what this new technology is and what benefits can be for brands. I mean, we're just at the beginning of this AI enhanced future. Like we know that the way we do things is going to fundamentally change in the next few years. And so we need to figure it out. We need to figure out how to use it to our best advantage, and also how to upskill our people and to make sure that they're prepared for this future as well.
So with your background, obviously you could have done a lot of things within digital marketing and technology. Like what, when you came across BrandGuard, like what drew you to this particular opportunity?
I loved their mission, the enabling the use of AI for marketers, because, as I said, we have to get ready for this future. Yeah. And I think that I think everybody is trying to put in place a plan. And mm-hmm. I think that's fantastic. But I think you have to look at both sides of the plan. Mm-hmm. I think that in the future, when we're using generative AI for creating marketing materials, mm-hmm. you're going to need brand governance that moves as fast as it does. Today, mm-hmm. everyone's dabbling. If you generate 10, 15, 20, even 50 images, a person can take a look at them and say, yeah. these are great and these aren't great. But when you get to the volume and the velocity of mm-hmm. really using generative AI at scale, mm-hmm. then you're going to need some sort of software, a brand governance software that runs alongside it. Yeah. But I think that the day thing is that you also need to find efficiencies for your teams to free up time to learn about AI and to practice and to play and to fail and to do all of those things. And so I think an automated brand governance system, which is what BrandGuard is, it enables that by automating the QA. And that's what really drew me to it, because I thought, we all know AI is coming. We also know that AI is going to bring some inherent problems, some inherent dangers, some inherent mistakes. And I didn't really feel like anybody was looking at how can we circumvent them? Yeah. How can we already start to plan to mitigate those problems rather than waiting until the problems arrive and then trying to put a solution in? Yeah. And so that's what drew me to BrandGuard. It was so exciting.
So when you talk about brand governance, like that's, you know, CMO and marketer speak, let's bring that to the CEO level. Like, can you give maybe an example, use case scenario, something of like when you say like looking at a couple pictures, okay, 10, 15, that can be done. But when you're doing a larger campaign, like why brand governance, like what that means, like, can you maybe give an example?
Of course. So think about brand governance as quality assurance, or think about it as a filter that understands your brands and makes sure that the things that get past the filter are on brand for you and fit all of your style guide rules. And the things that don't make it through the filter get stopped at the filter. Mm. So that concept of filter, generative AI needs a filter because of the non-deterministic nature of it. There's no guarantee what's going to pop out of it. Mm. You give it a prompt and it puts together what it believes fulfills the prompt. And no two images are going to be the same. Yeah. That's why right now persistence between images is difficult. Midjourney is working on that. Mm-hmm. However, so I'm going to use Midjourney as an example. It's a very popular tool. And even they admit that they can't prevent the application from generating nudity, for example. If nudity is anywhere in its training data, all they can do is put a filter on it to make sure that never gets to the end user. Yeah. And so if you think about brand governance, it's sort of the same thing. It's a filter that's shaped around your brand that makes sure the stuff that pops out the other side to the end user is something you'd be really proud to have and forward your brand stories.
Yeah, I think that your example of nudity, that one isn't obvious, but like what would be something that you feel that could maybe get through if you didn't have something in place that was really reviewing this, especially on a larger campaign? Like what would be something else where you'd be like, that was off brand and that's why, and this is why you missed it? Like could be a real scenario or just a made up hypothetical. What would you say could get through a normal process that didn't have these measures in place?
I think, well, this is an example that somebody has told me about because this guy named Noah Breyer, he was doing some generation of some collabs, you know, just generative AI, this times this with this, this with this, this with this. And he said, as he was doing it, what he realized every time he wanted to do a sneaker collab, even if he used another brand, Nike branding would come through. Because there is so much training data out there. Exactly. So if you're Adidas, that's a huge problem for you. But exactly. And it's because in all of the rich training data that most of these models have been trained on, which is the open internet, there's a huge volume of Nike ads out there. So in a way, they've almost become ubiquitous with sneaker or ubiquitous with trainer. So that's an example that you would want to make sure that you catch because the generative AI isn't necessarily seeing it as a problem because it's blurred those lines because it doesn't have that ability to reason. So that would be an example of something that you wouldn't want to happen. And as people are moving into generation, they're using a lot of these open models that are trained on the open internet. Yeah. And so it's really dependent. You know, if you think about generative AI, it's sort of like they're sort of like children and you don't know what they were taught before until they give you the answer. It's like, you know, you have a new pupil and you ask them a question and you don't know what the other teachers taught them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So that would be an example of what might get through if you're not applying something like this. Right now, it wouldn't be a problem because no person is going to let that get through. And if you're generating 50, 100 images, you can spot that right away. You just take it right out of the list. But as I said, when you're doing hyper-personalization in the future, imagine a future stack where you're automating. What you're doing is using generative AI to create a lot of content. You're automating the delivery based on target audiences through, you know, some sort of a programmatic system, maybe. Then you, when you're doing thousands, it's kind of impossible for a person to check. So that's why you want to have a machine that checks it, that's running alongside it as fast as it is.
So we've talked a little bit about brand governance today. Like, what are some of the other categories or use case scenarios for something like either BrandGuard or having some type of AI in place for brand safety? Like, what are some of the other categories or use cases?
Well, I think that if we think about that future marketing stack, I mean, I think a lot of people, I think a lot of marketers are trying to get there where you have a lot of content, a lot of personalized content, a decision engine to flight it into media. And I think in a world of that, you're going to need, I think you're going to need a three-part stack. I think you're going to need your traditional brand safety, like a double verify or an integral ad science to make sure that your media ends up in brand safe areas, reaches, is viewable, reaches people in brand safe areas. I think you're going to need some sort of a brand governance software to make sure the content within it, your brand story and adds to your brand rather than detracts from your brand. And then I think the third thing, because one of the biggest things we're talking about now besides AI is privacy and consent. So, you know, with as we look at GDPR, for example, here in the US, it's kind of going state by state. So I think a consent management platform is also going to be necessary in that future day, something like a safeguard privacy.
Yeah, I can see that. And this is going to be as this moves faster and faster, like in the past, I feel like certain things maybe could be neglected. But this, when you think about, especially all the money, the time, the effort that companies put into their brand and their and what's out there, there's just a lot of land. How I see AI at our current place in time is there's a lot of potential landmines to step on. Like there's a lot of things that can go wrong. And I can say personally, like as a business owner with the Mission Matters brand, like I don't care to be that trailblazer to make all those. So anyway, that's teeing up the question of for those that haven't considered some of the brand or the safety side of things or otherwise, like what do you think some of the initial dialogues internally should be? Like what kind of conversations should CMOs be having with their CEOs right now as they prepare for this next, you know, wave of what's going to happen?
Well, the really interesting thing is I think that CMOs get this already. They understand it as we've been talking to customers and to prospects. Yeah. I've never been in a business where we've never had one pitch meeting turned down. We have 100% attendance. That's never happened to me.
That's before. Amazing. I've never heard of that. And you've been doing this.
Exactly. And if it can get rescheduled, but everybody shows up and everybody really sees the need for it. But I think what's happening is that people are still testing. They're still they're still putting together their AI plan. So I think there are a few things that are kind of blocking the adoption of it. I think one of the things that's blocking the adoption of it is they think, oh, I kind of need to get my generation in order first before I think about governance. And generation probably won't be in order for the next 6 to 12 months. We'll be experimenting and a human can review it throughout that time. So I'll call you in 6 months. Do you know what I mean? And I think that that's one of the things. And the thing is, BrandGuard requires precision. Quality assurance requires precision. If you think about the probabilistic nature of AI, you've just talked about, you know, your own concerns about the fact that sometimes it's imperfect, sometimes it has flaws. And that's kind of forgivable in a generation space, but it's not forgivable in quality assurance. You have to have absolute preciseness and accuracy in that. So actually, we kind of need to start now because it takes a while to train and to give feedback and to retrain those models so that they can get to that precision. Because in a way, we're taking artificial intelligence, we're muscling it into this really precise way of using it. And so one of the things we try to explain to people is you kind of need to start, if you want to be 6 months away and have a perfect system, you kind of need to start now because you don't have anybody who you can give us for a week, a month, 2 weeks to train with us dedicated. What it's going to do is it's going to fit in your day job. You're going to, you know, you're going to maybe look at it for 15 minutes a week and give us a little bit of feedback and then not see us again for another 3 weeks. And that's just the reality of business. And so I think one of the things is we're trying to tell people is if you want governance to be precise, It takes time to do. So you kind of want to start now. I think the other thing is also, but it's not like, oh, it's a magic after 6 months, boom, I'm just using 6 months at the concept of it taking time. What also happens throughout it is it gets better and better. So let's say it starts out and its accuracy is, let's say, 92%. You want it to get to 98%. Well, that 92% is probably already useful further up in your creative food chain.
Yeah.
When you don't need that level of precision, and it probably saved like a few minutes up there, right? Mm-hmm. And then as it gets more and more precise, it'll save more and more time. And we believe that what that time allows you to do is, if you start now, is that time that's being saved, it's almost invisible labor often. We hear clients tell us, especially clients that do co-marketing and allow their logo to be used by others, that they probably reject 30 to 50% of the first pass for wrong logo, incorrect use, all that time. And their employees hate doing it because they're telling people to do the same thing over and over again. So if you think about saving that time, then that's time that that employee can redeploy to training themselves on AI, to playing around with the prompt engineering, to upskilling themselves for the future. And so I think that it, that time, whatever it is, 4 months, 6 months, whatever it takes to get to perfect, that time is really well spent, because during that time, you're going to find time savings that will allow you to get more experimental with generative AI and be more ahead of the game.
Yeah, I've had this conversation often, and the interesting thing is just for as people kind of wrap their head around this and training and models and everything else, is that it's not like you can just flip a switch and it's done. Like this is gonna take some time, number one, but it's also, and some learning, like anything, but it's not maybe like some other things. Let's just say when social media came out, right? And you think about, okay, well, we're gonna set up a Facebook page, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that, and obviously that takes some planning and some thought process around it, but normally you can kind of, you know what that end product's going to be. This takes, like, there's a learning process for not just for the technology, for the brand, for the team that's going to be operating it. But in my mind is like understanding the inevitability of it, and that others, your competitors, are in your same space, like those that are adapting and that are considering this and going deeper in the conversation. It's my belief that they're going to be the ones that really win in the long run versus those that are maybe trying to, you know, catch up. I'm not against catching up, right? Like, I'm not saying that, but those that are kind of already weaving this into their day-to-day businesses and lives, like, they're going to be the winners in their sectors. That's the way I think.
I think so too. And you say we know what to do with the Facebook page. We didn't in the early days.
Yeah.
When we first got Facebook, we didn't know what brands were supposed to do on them. Yeah. Were they supposed to talk to the consumer? Were they supposed to use it as a broadcast medium? Mm. There was a lot of trial and error in those first days of social as well. And you're right. The brands that tucked in and said, I'm going to try this, and I'm going to dedicate time to try to figure this out, and I'm going to make the mistakes. Yeah. Also remember, better to make the mistakes when nobody's there. It's better to make the mistakes.
Didn't think about that one. That's true, Deirdre. Better to make this mistake when the page is just starting.
Right. When there wasn't 1 billion people there. It's okay to rip up. It's only 100,000 people. It's all right. They won't notice. But I think with every new thing, we have to find our way through and figure it out. I mean, I know that, like, AI is scary. And you talked about, you know, how you worry about it. You don't want to be that. You don't want to be the canary in the coal mine. And I know that there's a lot of concern about it. I know there's a lot of concern in Hollywood now, particularly. You know, this is a huge center of the last strikes. And all technology is scary. Mm-hmm. And this comes back to why I believe that technology is so strong. Mm. It will revolutionize things, and people won't be able to do things the same way. Yep. But the people who figure it out, can stay with it, and tame it as a tool, are going to come out on top. Just think about the music industry. Back in the old days, you had to have a contract, because a studio had to pay for your studio time. Mm-hmm. You had to be under an agent. Like, it was such a machine that you had big name voices out there, but it was really a limited palette. And then the, like, mixing software became, you could get it on your computer. Exactly. Pro Tools. Exactly. So it became, you could put it in the hands of everybody. And we hear so many new voices because of that. We got to see so many new artists. Like, Billie Eilish was discovered on SoundCloud.
Amazing. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, would she have been able to come through a studio system and been as successful? I'm not sure, because she is, you know, the music doesn't lend itself to pop, you know, pop music, for example, but she's such a beautiful voice and such a great thinker. So if you think about what tools will enable, I think that, once again, I think every new tool has allowed marketers and brands to tell more personal, more diverse, smaller stories, bigger stories, small stories that became big stories. You know, something started out as the tiny little experiment on the web and then became a billboard in Times Square. Like that woman and the really sweet woman on TikTok who had a great voice. It's going to come to me. But anyway, she's amazing on TikTok. She's just such a genuine person, always sharing really personal stories. And then she was on a billboard in Times Square. And just started out with one creator who is very shy and she was just using it as a tool to help her out with her own social anxiety.
Yeah. These stories, I definitely can tell your passion in the space and for digital marketing overall. I just have to ask, from your vantage point as an early day pioneer and now leading the wave with BrandGuard in AI and what that means for brands, like what excites you right now? It could be technology, it could be use case, it could be the future. Like just what excites you right now in the space?
I think everything we just talked about, I know that someone's going to do something with AI that's going to create something absolutely amazing. I think that we're going to see better stories. We're going to see different stories. Yeah. We're going to see a more variety of stories. And I think when I look at, I subscribe to Vanity Fair. And this last month was the Hollywood issue. No surprise, the Oscars was the other night. And when I looked at the spread that they had on the front page, I think it was four actors in the front, four actors in the gatefold. So it was eight actors, such a diverse set of actors and actresses. Yeah. And I could never imagine that when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
That just wasn't the Hollywood machine. Do you know what I mean?
And that's so true. You're right. I didn't even think about that.
And I believe that technology has enabled that to happen because it has allowed the smaller films to be made, the independent films to be made and get distribution. I think streaming gets there's a lot of problems with the commercials around everything. I think there's a lot of problems around commercials, payment, and, you know, value. Yeah. But when you just look at it from a pure exposure, artistry, telling stories standpoint, I believe that the technology has enabled smaller filmmakers to create smaller films. Streaming has allowed them to reach a wider audience. And that has changed Hollywood fundamentally. Mm. When we look at the blockbuster films we have now, how many of them are telling these amazing stories that we probably would not have heard 50 years ago? They would have been treated as too niche, that there wasn't an audience. It amazes me now that some of the biggest blockbusters in the United States, like Squid Game, aren't even in English.
Yeah.
I don't think that ever would happen. I was the weirdo.
Can you imagine Squid Games being pitched? Can you imagine Squid Games being pitched like even 20 years ago? Yeah, like even 20 years ago, and like let alone 30, whatever. But like even 20 years ago, this is the show. This is how we're going to do it. Trust me, people are...
Trust me. Not only is it going to be the show, but believe it or not, we're going to make games out of it. We're going to have merch.
I went to the Squid Game experience in Hollywood, that whole setup they did, and it was amazing. It was an immersive experience, and we went in there, and you got to play some of the games, and I lost most of them. It's okay. Battleship, they got me so quick. I was so mad. I was in the little two-person ship, and I was the first person hit. I'm like, I want my money back. This is terrible. They got me, but I got to feel and experience that little piece of what it was like to be on that show and the pain. No, thank you.
I love that. Those AR immersive experiences are amazing. I went with my best friend and her son, and we did the Star Wars.
No, this wasn't AR. They built the actual set.
Oh, they built the actual set.
No, this was an actual set, like on their soundstage, huge like setup over, I think it was CBS Studios. Yeah, no, it was the actual set. Yeah. So you're literally sitting in the big old like thing, you're playing the game.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. I didn't know that. Yeah, we went when it was AR, but it was a set. And so you actually quickly moved. So you had a big backpack that was the battery. And so you had the gun and, like, you know, you shot the bad guys and you tried to finish your mission. And it was out so that it took advantage of the set that had elevation, for example. When you ran downhill, you physically ran downhill. Of course, you know, like everybody was safe, it had lots of space. but it was really cool.
and we divert, but you know, can't help it because this is what's possible. Like the new mediums, it doesn't have to be better or anything else like that or this or that when it comes to the stories, but the ability for creators to express themselves, right? For brands to express themselves, but for the brands also to have the safety in place for them to be able to create the quantity of content, but also the quality, and also to do collaborations and partnerships and not have to worry about, how their brand's going to be represented because those safeguards are in place. So I think like all of these things, it just opens up a big world of possibility. That being said, Deidre, if somebody is listening to this and they want to learn more about BrandGuard, they want to connect with you and your team. I mean, what are the next steps? Like, how do they do that?
Super easy. Just go to brandguard.ai. That's our website. You can also email us at contact@brandguard.ai. And if you want to check us out on LinkedIn, we are BrandGuard AI. Just search that. You'll find that. So pretty much, I think we've got a corner on the name, so you could find us anywhere.
Fantastic. And for everybody watching, just so you know, we'll put those links in the show notes so you can just click on them and head right on over. And speaking to the audience, if this is your first time with us and you haven't hit that subscribe button yet, hey, this is your invitation. Hit that subscribe button. We have many more interesting guests coming up on the way, and we don't want you to miss a thing. And if you're a long-term listener, don't forget that review on Apple Podcasts. We sure do appreciate it. Deirdre, it really has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show today and lending your time and expertise to myself, because you taught me a lot and our audience as well. So again, thank you.
Thank you, Adam. Really appreciate it. This was fun.